Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Dialed In. This is a broadcast where we focus on communication, relationships, and personal growth with actionable steps that you can implement immediately to help you live your best life. Our guest today is part of our Big Life series. Now, if this is your first time listening, in this series, I'm talking with people who are living life in a big way. When I say big, I mean they are living life using their gifts and talents and doing the things they love. I'd like to introduce you to Andy Hall. Andy is the founder and managing director at Andy Hall Coaching. He is also an executive director with the John Maxwell team. Andy is passionate about adding significant value to others. Welcome to Dialed In, Andy.
Hi, Bethany. Thank you for having me. It's just absolutely great to be here. So thanks for having me.
Of course. Our pleasure. So I'm just excited. I know that the things you're going to share today are going to bring some great tips and great value to our listeners. And I asked you to come on because I see you out there. I see you diving deep into helping others have new awarenesses and to really propel them forward to live into their purpose and their passion. So It's obvious that you love what you do. And my first question is, have you always lived life in a big way? And if not, how'd you get here?
Well, that's a great question. I think the answer to the question, when you reflect back on your life, which a question like this Bethany does, is no, without a doubt, it's definitely not. My journey is probably in two parts. I'm 55 years old this year. I spent up until 6.5 years ago, I spent best part of 30 years of my life in corporate, as you guys and girls in the States would call it. I spent 30 years in retail. I came straight out of what I describe as a dreadful education at the age of about 17. I was one of those people that unless I could kick a ball around on a soccer field, I wasn't interested in being at school. So if I could do some running or sort of do some athletics or I could kick a soccer ball around, I was happy. But if I had to sit in a classroom and be told what to do and how to think, I wasn't happy. So but I left school as soon as I could. And I left school, so we're talking 1981. And back in 1981 here in the UK, and I think in most of Europe at the time, we were in quite a deep recession. So there was really no job to go to. And when I left school, my father was a police officer for 26, 27 years. So as I was in my sort of teenage years, when I was starting to become more aware of what it is I was wanting to do, I thought, Dad comes home and talks about some really interesting stories about being a policeman. I think I want to do that. And that's really was the only idea that I had when I came out of school. But I couldn't do that. I couldn't even attempt to do that until the age of 18. 18 and a half, I think. So I had about a year and a half. And my parents said, you know, you can still be around here, but you've got to get yourself a job. And there wasn't any jobs. And we had something called a careers center here in the UK. And I don't know whether that translates across to the US or not. But effectively, an office where when you came out of full-time education, you went to get support to get yourself back in the workplace. And I remember my first trip to this careers office. And this careers office said, well, we don't have any jobs for you, but what we do have is something called a youth opportunity program. And really what that was a government program where the government paid employers to take you off the dole queue, as we called it here in the UK, out of the unemployment line, so you didn't show in the unemployment figures. And you would go to work in this particular place, and the particular place wouldn't have to pay for you, the government would pay for you. So I got given this little index card and got told to go and see Mr. Seymour, who was the manager of WH Smith, a retailer that actually has had some time in the US. So some of your US listeners that have got a bit of a memory will remember W.H. Smith from probably in airports or gift shops in the US. So I started working for Mr. Seymour in the W.H. Smith store at the age of about 17 in my hometown of Folkestone in Kent, which is, if you want to look it up on the map, is the closest point of the UK to France. In actual fact, you're nearer France in Folkestone than you are to London, because France is literally 22 miles away across the English Channel. And I started there in W.H. Smith, and 22 years later, I left.
Wow.
So all I remember doing for large parts of my career in W.H. Smith was working hard and getting the next promotion. So only after about 18 months, I think, at Folkestone, I got asked to move to London, and I ended up working in and around London for 5 or 6 years, and I just continued to get promoted. And in actual fact, I got promoted in the latter part of my W.H. Smith career. This is where I fell in love with the U.S. I got promoted. In fact, I made a job happen for me, where I became regional vice president of W.H. Smith. Airports and gift shops on the eastern side of the USA. So in 2001, between 2001 and 2003, it was my penultimate job in W.H. Smith. That brought me to live and work in Atlanta out of Atlanta for 2 years. I got brought home from that. The story of me leaving W.H. Smith probably begins with a story that will be pertinent to every single one of your listeners, Bethany, and as it is probably across the world, never mind in the US. I landed in Atlanta 23 days after 9/11. And you'll know, being an American, and probably can remember back to that time, America changed pretty quickly after 9/11. So I was brought over to the US to be a regional vice president of the airports and gift shop business at a time when Americans stopped traveling if they didn't have to, so they stopped using airports, and if they stayed in hotels, they didn't stay in the hotels where W.H. Smith had their gift shops. So I spent best part of 2 years trying to play a part in saving that business, and it didn't work out. And one of the cost cuttings, one of the savings, was sending me back home. And when they sent me back home, there wasn't a plan for me to come back home, so I was dumped into a role into what you guys would call home office, or head office, we would call here in the UK, into some made-up job that I hated. And I went to my then leader, my then boss, to say, look, I don't like what I'm doing anymore. What are the opportunities for me to progress still in the organization, but I don't like what I'm doing? And I remember the answer as if it was yesterday. You can go and do what it is that you've done before, but we don't think you've got the potential to go on and progress any further. And I went, okay, that's interesting. I think I'm better than that. And maybe 22 years in one company probably is a long time. So maybe it is time to think about changing. I guess a quick story around that was I just decided to leave. I put my resume out into the workplace, and an organization, an electrical retailer. The best analogy with your US listeners is Best Buy, but electrical retailer called Dixon's, it's very similar to Best Buy in the US. They hired me to be a regional manager within sort of literally, I think, a few weeks of me putting my resume on the market. I was hired by this company called Dixon's, where I stayed for 7 years. I progressed from regional manager to divisional director in that business. I transitioned from one business to another. So I had a really successful time there. One of the things that I think I learned through that experience was, I don't mean this to come across arrogant, but probably was that I was a lot better than I perhaps thought I was. So I became quite successful quite quickly in the new organization. And I was probably doubtful when I went across that I could probably replicate what it was that I'd done previously. So that was pleasing and engaging. But interesting enough, fast forward 7 years, I ended up leaving Dixon's, the name of the organization. And I left an organization for the first time because I had different different set of values to the person that I was working for. A new person was brought in to be operations director, so I guess VP of operations to translate it across. He arrived and he wasn't interested in me as an individual. He wasn't really interested in us as individuals. He wasn't really interested in how we thought. He just wanted to come in and tell people what to do. And that just didn't sit very well. We didn't sit very well with all three of us, actually, that were in that role at the time. And my two colleagues were in a similar role. They got moved to different parts of the business, and I got asked to leave. And that was, I remember, you know, you probably hear it in my voice at the time, that was a, oh my gosh, what do you mean leave? What do you mean leave? We don't want you anymore. We're going to give you 6 months money, but we want you to leave. So you sign here, and that signs your contractual rights away. And you go into that. I certainly went into a, oh my God, you know, I've got, you know, what about my car? How am I going to pay the mortgage? All that sort of stuff. And I remember sort of that fear of driving back home and telling Charlotte that was what was going on. One of the things I learned from that experience was it's never as bad as you think it is. And within a few weeks, again, someone at another company, my third and my last company in terms of this story, hired me to go and work for them at a very similar level, at a better salary. And that was my last corporate employer. So I spent 3 years. This is before now. I went out and ventured by myself up to six. And so we're talking about 10 years ago now in terms of time, in terms of timeline. I was sold a dream in that organization that didn't really come to fruition. And I would describe that 3 years as probably surviving and doing my best to make a difference. I had many, many different bosses through that 3 years. But ironically, again, I left the business because of the last leader that came into the business was very similar to the one that decided I didn't fit in Dixon's. And this guy rocked up and we just butted heads for about 6 months. But this time, because of my experience of being asked to leave my previous business, I actually couldn't wait to be asked to be left this one because I understood the process now, having had the experience of leaving and knowing that I would get some cash and they'd have to buy me out of my contract. I was in a place of, I really don't like this, so actually I can't wait for the phone to ring for James, who was my boss, to say, come and see HR, we don't want you anymore. And that happened, and I was delighted, and I couldn't wait. And I think Charlie, my wife, couldn't wait for that to happen either, because it was having a profound impact on me, I think, personally and emotionally. If I reflect back to that moment, all I did was, when I left that business, I thought, well, okay, I've got to go and get myself a job. I hadn't even thought for a minute to even do what it is that I do now. I know I was starting to get frustrated with what I now know was poor leadership. And I don't even think I probably realized it that much at the time. But you and I would now describe it as I was being led poorly or led differently. And these people's values around people and around customers, because I was still in the retail industry, was very different to mine. So they asked me to leave again. So I start my search, I guess, for what would have been my fourth corporate job. And this is probably pertinent to the story, because I got a phone call to go and see the most senior person in HR. So I guess we would call them HR director here, so senior VP of HR in the US, of a travel company, a hotel company called Travelodge. They were and still are huge here in the UK, and it was a really significant role for them. They were having trouble with succession. They were looking for someone very specific to look after a very large part of the UK. And I thought, this is right up my street. This would be a really useful addition to my resume. So I went along for this chat stroke interview with the HR, head of HR of this organization. And it was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I was asked to meet them at this hotel location. And I went into this hotel lobby and asked where this person was. And this person was sitting at a table in the middle of the bar area of the hotel. And it's at the end of lunchtime, so it's busy. And I'm thinking, my first reaction is, this is a strange place to conduct an interview. Not only is it in the bar, but it's in the middle of the bar. It's not tucked away. It's noisy. This is strange. Mm-hmm. And I went up to her, and I shook her hand, and she didn't look me in the eye, and I thought, that's really strange. She asked me to sit down, so I sit down, and she looked, and I wish this was visual, she looked at her watch, and she said, Andy, it's 2:00. You've got an hour to tell me about yourself. So instantly, I think, that's a really quite basic question for someone, I guess, at my level and the role I was looking for, but it's like, okay, I can deal with that. So I think I talked to her for about 5 or 6 minutes about me and my background and where I've been and what I've done. And I stop. And at no time does she look at me whilst I'm speaking to her. She's writing notes verbatimly. And I stop. And she stops writing and she looks up. And she says to me, is that it? I went, what do you mean, is that it? She said, is that your story? And I went, no, that's the highlights. She said, well, I did say you could talk for an hour. And I went, so are you saying you'd like for me to carry on? She said, yes, that's what I told you to do.
Wow.
And of course,
okay.
My mind's whizzing now. I'm thinking, okay. So, okay, I get the message. So I talk again for what seems like about another 15 or 20 minutes. And I think, well, okay, I've spoken for the double of the length of the time that I did before. Surely there's another question now. And I want to be aware that give her an opportunity because she's still writing away and not looking at me. So I stop. It's about 2:30, 2:35. And just exactly as I described to you before, she said, just like I said before, Andy, she said, if you've got nothing else to say, we can end the interview now. And I went, no, I can talk to you for another 25 minutes. She said, that's great, good. So I do. And I know my time is up because it gets to 3:00. And at 3:00, she says to me, stop. She said, that's it, time's up. And she said, we'll be in touch.
Wow.
And I got up, and she got up. And I shook her hand and I walked to the car, and in between leaving that bar of that hotel and getting to my car in the parking lot, I rung Charlotte, surprisingly, because she was in a big corporate role at the time. She takes the call instead of it going to her voicemail, and she says, what's up, you've been for your interview? And I went, yep, and I can't do this anymore, darling. I do not want to do this anymore. I need to be out to go out there and do something that makes an impact and a difference on this shoddy and pathetic, or whatever words I used at the time, leadership that I'm experiencing here in the UK. So I've just been for an interview for a big job, and that's the culture of this organisation. I've just left my last two roles over the last 8 or 9 years through poor leadership. I can't do this anymore. And she said, okay, mm-hmm. Come home, let's talk about it. And I never went back to a corporate role after that.
Wow.
So from the minute of driving home, we'd both decided that we didn't have a clue about how we were going to do it. I knew what I was passionate about. I could articulate that really well. And I was passionate about people. I was passionate and wanted to add value to people because that's what I thought I'd done in the successful parts of my corporate career. I was passionate about a thing called coaching because I'd heard about it a long time ago. And I think as a corporate leader, I'd tried to coach, but I didn't really know what coaching was all about until I got accredited and joined the John Maxwell team as well. What was even more ironic, to finish that story completely and probably give you an opportunity to come back at me, Bethany, was on the way home, the phone rings from the recruitment agency and the headhunter, and he says, and the guy says, he said, you've blown them away. They can't wait to see you again. They want you to come back for the second stage of the interview. And I went, you've got to be kidding me. And he went, no, they do this. She's seen 8 or 9 people today, and you're one of 2 people that she thinks is great. So they want to put you through a process. And I said, what, 2 of us through a process? He said, yeah. I went, no way. Or words to that effect. No way. I'm done. And he went, no. He said, you need to think about it. I said, I don't need to think about it. I already thought about it. He said, you need to sleep on it. I'll call you tomorrow. I said, there's really no need. My mind is made up. I don't care what it is that she's got to offer me, and however much money you want to pay me, there's no way I'm going to go and work for that organization. He said, I'll call you tomorrow. And he did. But I never took the call. It went to voicemail. It went to voicemail several times, and I deleted the voicemail messages. I never returned the call because I was just determined that I couldn't do it anymore. I'd worked for 3 really poor leaders in the, over the last 10 years. And I'm thinking, I've just got to go out and see whether I can do something about changing this or help and support people that do want to do things differently. So that was the moment that after 30 years of corporate, I decided I wasn't going to do it anymore. So it hadn't got scary at that point. It was just that I knew that I couldn't do it. I knew inside that Charlotte, my wife, had a really good job. So I knew that if she was prepared to support me through the next step, we'd be okay financially because I'd had the payout from the previous organization. So it wasn't, what I was about to step into wasn't as big a risk as I know it can be for some people. So that's when 30 years of corporate retailing finished. After I walked out of that incredible experience in a hotel in North London.
Wow. Okay. Well, I want to know more. So what happened next, and how did you know even what to do next, and how did you make that transition, and what did that look like, and weren't you afraid?
Yes and no. I guess one of the things that I probably had no idea how to do was build and grow a business. I had no idea about that. And probably at that stage, I wasn't even thinking about that. Probably what I was doing was probably pushing that to the back of my mind and thinking I'll worry about that later. But right at this moment in time, you know, why would anybody want to bring Andy Hall into their business to do what it is he's passionate about? And really what that came down to me was I was passionate about coaching, as I mentioned earlier, and I was passionate and curious about this thing called leadership, because I'd seen good examples of leadership. I thought I'd done an okay job at being a leader myself after looking after some relatively big teams in the corporate world. So I was pretty sure that my experience on my resume would be useful. But I had to struggle with this internal debate in terms of, do I need to go and get myself accredited or qualified to go alongside this experience? And as ever, when you start to take advice, one of the things that I learned really quickly is be careful if you take advice, because actually, or you ask for advice, because people will give it to you. And the more people you ask for advice, the more different opinions you get. And in the end, you end up having to come back and say, well, a number of them said that and a number of them said that, but I've still got to make up my own mind. And my own mind was made up in terms of, for me and my credibility and my confidence, I wanted to go and get myself accredited. So I left corporate world in the April. I probably spent sort of May and June doing my research. I signed up for a coaching accreditation course in the November of 2013. So in November 2013, I went and got myself accredited to be a coach, and I spent a week in the classroom, which was really nerve-wracking for me, because remember what my baggage was and my history and my beliefs around education. Was I'm not very good at this, and so going back into the classroom for the first time was like, oh, this is a big step. So I went and got myself accredited through November, I think through to probably February of 2014. So got my International Coaching Federation ICF basic coaching accreditation, which was really useful. And at the same time, so somewhere in that journey, somewhere around the summer of 2013. As I was networking and catching up with friends and colleagues, I met with a guy who'd done some training for me and the organization I was in when I was in Dixon's. And we met up for a coffee. He was an inspirational guy anyway. And he said to me, where are you at? And I said, look, one of the things that I know and love is coaching. I'm signed up for a coaching accreditation. And one of the things I know I'm passionate about is teaching leadership. And I know I've got practical examples of leadership, but I haven't got any content. He went, oh, I've got the answer to that. And he said, how do you feel about writing content? I said, I don't want to write any content. I don't want to sit behind a computer and write content. That is just not for me. He said, have you heard about this thing, John Maxwell team? And I went, no, never heard of John Maxwell team. Who's John Maxwell? And Dave, my friend, because he became quite a close friend after that, Dave was a founder member, can you believe, of the John Maxwell Tavern. He'd heard about, he was using John's work in his own business, and he was on the original phone call with Paul Martinelli when they were selling JMT. So he was one of the founder members and went to the hotel in West Palm Beach where they had the very first John Maxwell team event. Ironically, he never went back any time after that. I think he went into mentorship the first year but never stayed. And Dave and I have probably lost touch since then, but Dave was responsible. I remember him sitting there showing me on his computer. He was showing me what we now know as the online platform, and showing me about the six core books and the content that was available. I was like, oh my God, this is great. So actually there's some content there that's written for me. All I've got to do is tweak it. And he went, yeah, absolutely. So I went, I'm in. How do I find? So I think I signed an online form, and a program coordinator rang me. Lady called Janice, I think, Pescatori, I think her name was, something like that. And I joined the John Maxwell team. I joined the John Maxwell team in the September of 2013, so 6 months after I left corporate, just as I was about to start my ICF accreditation as well. I went to my first live event, as we then called it, or IMC as we now call it, in February 2014. So what those two things did, probably by the early to mid part of 2014, that gave me some confidence, and what I felt was credibility in terms of, hey, I've got this 30 years retail experience, 16 or 17 of those at a relatively senior level. So I've got experience, if you like, on my resume. And now I've got some leadership content that I can share with people. And I've now been accredited to be a coach. And of course, having joined mentorship straight away in IMC in February 2014, I didn't have too much to do when I came back from that. So I was on mentorship call after mentorship call after mentorship call. What I think I was clever enough to do at the time, and I've given lots of people advice who've joined the JMT since about this, was I knew I wanted to be a coach. So my starting point and my single laser focus was Christian Simpson's course. So I joined mentorship and I was on pretty much all of Christian's calls. I couldn't get enough of Christian's calls. So really through the 6 to 9 months from the middle of April 2013 to the middle of 2014, I'd got myself some credibility. But then I had to start thinking about, with actually no real pressure at the time, how am I going to build a business? And I don't think I went about that too well at the time, but I had some confidence to actually start going out and talking to people. And most of the people that I spoke to in those early days were people that I knew. I just went back and reworked my network and said, hey, you know me quite well, or hey, remember me? Yes, I do. We had a really good relationship at the time. This is now what I'm now doing. Would you be interested? Yeah, and they'd say, come and have a coffee, and we'd talk. And it was really my old network through 2014, 2015, that along with, I think, the mentorship of the key players in the John Maxwell team at the time, that gave me, I think, the credibility, the confidence, to press on through, to actually go out and hunt for clients and do the difficult things that I probably really didn't like doing. You know, as Chris Robbins say now, and you hear people talking about it all the time on the Facebook page, if you're going to make a success of this business, you've got to get out of the house. So many times in those early days, in terms of, well, I don't want to get out of the house. You know, I'm tired of going to meetings and people saying no, or I'm tired of picking up the phone and people saying no, or I'm tired of going to Chamber of Commerce meetings and people saying no. But you just had to sort of get up and keep going, because I knew that I didn't want to go back. And you talked, I think we talked offline about there probably would have been easy for me to go, well, this is not really it working out in the way that I'd like it to work out financially. I could go back to corporate, but the fear of going back to corporate based on my recent experiences was just too much. And I think I was at my second IMC and I'd started to connect and build a relationship with Christian through being on a lot of his calls. And I saw him in the corridor of the Marriott in the Orlando Hotel. So this was probably my second IMC, and he went, "How you doing?" And I went, "Yeah, I'm doing really well." He said, "I'm still going?" I went, "Yeah, absolutely." And he said, "You do know now you're unemployable, don't you?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You've been out of corporate now for 18 months." He said, "No one will touch you. The world's changed in those 18 months." And I went, "Oh, really?" He went, "Yeah, yeah." And I don't know whether it was his way of just continuing to fill me with confidence that I was doing the right thing. But he made me think of, well, okay, if that's partly true and I don't really want to go back, then let's keep being determined to follow what was my dream. And that's really what I've been doing since. And again, I guess through the power of the John Maxwell team that we're both members of, Bethany, and the support that I've had through the mentors and the faculty, and in no significant part whatsoever, senior people, is what we probably call senior people of the John Maxwell team, that you and I would call really, really close friends. Some of those have become part of a mastermind group that I've been working together on for almost a year now. All of those people, I've borrowed their belief. So when times have been hard, I've borrowed their belief, and I've borrowed the mentor's belief. You know, I've used the John Maxwell team, and the John Maxwell team for, I hope it goes on forever, and I'm sure it will. And as long as it goes on, as long as I'm still living and breathing, I will find a way to stay connected to them, because that community that is now, 25,000 strong, they've been a huge part in my life. And you and I are talking right now on this call as a result of us being associated with the John Maxwell right. team and some of the people that lead that team. So that's probably that's been my corporate journey. It's been ups and downs. My non-corporate journey, sorry. There's been ups and downs since 2013, but financially I've done okay. I've hit all of my goals, and in the last 2 to 3 years, one of the things that I've really focused on. People say to me, and I get a lot of questions around, "Andy, you come all the way back to Florida every time for IMC. How do you do that? What's the driver behind that? And actually, in some cases, how do you afford that financially?" And there's two answers to that. Is I don't have, in the corporate world, my team was so important to me. One of the things I learned really quickly, actually with the advice of my wife, was actually not being in the corporate space. You don't have that team anymore. The John Maxwell team filled that void for me in terms of not have been a team that directly reported to me, but they were a team that lifted me up on many occasions and still do. So I come back to IMC to get my fix of the people, because I'm experienced in JMT now. I like to add value to the new people that are coming into the organization. That fits one of my true values and my beliefs. Financially, how do I do it? Again, I'm probably blessed in a way that, you know, Charlotte's got a corporate job, so we've got her income as well. But first and foremost, what does my business support me to do, rightly or wrongly? And I just choose it to be rightly for me. The first thing it does, it supports my personal growth and personal development. So I've pretty much reinvested everything that I've ever earned in the Andy Hall coaching space back in my personal development. And what I include that as an airfare to Florida. I include that as a hotel room in Florida, as well as including paying for mentorship or being an executive director or being mentored for them. So I include all of that. So that's my starting point. That's my starting point. So before I ever think about it needing to support me, I guess viably or sustainably in terms of putting food on the table, fortunately I'm in a space of, that's the first place any income goes, in terms of it protects my ability to come back to Florida twice a year. It protects my ability that if Paul and Roddy are doing empowerment mentoring event, I can come to that. with the blessing of Charlotte, of course. I don't take advantage of it or try to. So that's probably and I'm cool with that, because one of my drivers isn't about making money. I would like to make enough money for it to continue to pay for my continued growth and my continued learning and my continued reinvestment in me. But also that's the starting point. And I also I love serving as an ambassador when I come back as well. So the opportunity to be ambassador in IMC is, it feels like it gets harder and harder work every single time I go back, but I love it. Because I guess when I think about why is that, I ultimately know that if I'm helping Christian Del Rosario with the headshots on stage, which I've done for the last four or five times, I know I've got an opportunity to impact someone that's about to step up on stage the first time and have their photographs taken because they're at their first event. And that's really important to me. It's one of my core values that keeps me going.
I love it. I love your story. And for people that are listening, that they know that they're facing challenges and they want to go a different direction in their life, whether that be a different job or even stepping out and doing something completely different than what they've done before, what do you think, what would be your biggest piece of advice for them if they're preparing to make a change? I mean, if you had to narrow down one thing that really, really helped you be able to live out your best life, could you do that? Do you know what that would be?
Yeah, I'm going to work really hard at ensuring that I answer your question, because you actually say one thing. So Andy Hall has difficulty in saying one thing, but I'm going to try. So the one thing I would say is it's so important, I think, of who you surround yourself with. In John's, you know, 15 Invaluable Laws book, we would talk about the law of the inner circle. My inner circle has become so valuable to me. So it's my mastermind group at a narrow level. It's the John Maxwell team at a slightly more macro level. So it's who you surround yourself with. You'll find, and I know a number of us tell this story, Bethany, in terms of you'll find that who you thought was your inner circle when you were in the corporate space aren't. And I found that quite difficult to deal with when I left the corporate space, because I thought a number of people that were in my team were friends and allies as well. But actually, one of the things I learned really quickly were that they were my friend because they needed me to be their friend, because I was their boss. So the minute I wasn't important to their career anymore, I wasn't important to them. I found that quite difficult. Being a high eye in the world of disc, I struggled. I looked upon that as a bit of rejection to start with. But my evolution through this journey is actually I've got a whole set of friends from all different parts of the world now. As a result of who I've surrounded myself with. So I don't care whether it's who. I think you need to think about who's your coach and who's your mentor, who's going to help you one to one. And I think you need to think about again, what's the wider circle that you surround yourself with. So I think the one thing is about the people that you surround yourself with, and what role do each and every one of those play in helping and support you, because I think, as we said offline before we started the recording, for me, Bethany, in the journey that I've been on in the last 5 or 6 years, I think I probably would have gone back to corporate without the ability to turn to a number of people that that I love to pieces now, that were able to say to me, "Are you sure? What's the reason?" And have a really good coaching conversation with me about what's your reason for doing that, and challenge me around that thinking, because that's what a great inner circle I think does for you. Not only do they lift you up when they're down, they ask you the questions that probably other people wouldn't ask you. And they've got your best interests at heart, genuinely your best interests at heart. There's no other motive for them apart from them wanting to see you succeed. So for me it's about who's coaching me, who's mentoring me, one-to-one, one-to-few, spending the time with my John Maxwell team family, spending my time with my empowerment mentoring community, where you and I really met. That's the one thing. So people for me, and who you mm-hmm. surround yourself with, have been the biggest difference.
Yeah, and I would totally 110% agree with that too. I've seen that in my own journey. Who you surround yourself with matters. And you know, as I'm listening to your story, I kind of took a few key points that I'd like to share as we wrap up. And for those of you who have been taking notes, I'm sure you probably have these down too. If you haven't been taking notes, grab your pen and paper. Here's a breakdown of what my takeaways were from Andy's story. And there were probably 20 I could have written down, but I chose these top three. Number one, in order to know what direction you're going in life, you've got to know your values. And you need to work with people that have similar values. Value alignment is key to you living your best life. Number two, keep going even when it's hard. And like Andy said, a lot of times you have to borrow the belief of the people that are in your inner circle to propel you forward in those times where you want to retreat to safety. But it's worth it if you're going to live your best life. And then number three, the power of who you spend your time with. So one of the things I heard early on, in my journey, as I branched out from corporate and joined the John Maxwell team, was you're the average of the five people that you spend the most time with. And that really, really, really made me evaluate who I was spending my time with. And I think that, again, is vital to your success. So, Andy, thank you again so much for being here today. I know we went a few minutes over, and I appreciate you staying on the line with me. If people want to know more about what you do, how do they get a hold of you? What's the best way to contact or connect with you?
They can connect with me through andyhallcoaching.com, Bethany. So Andy Hall, my surname, coaching.com.
Great. Excellent. So I'll post Andy's information in the description of the podcast too, just in case you didn't connect with that here as we were talking. And he is one to follow. If you want to continually be inspired to continually have your mindset challenged to take you to a new level, be sure that you connect with Andy. So again, Andy, thank you for being here. I appreciate your time today. And until next time, everyone, take action, live big, and stay dialed in.